From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Where can pregnant women struggling with addiction to opioids turn for help? How are infants affected by exposure to opioids? Julia Lurie, a reporter for Mother Jones, set out to answer these questions. She tells us about two women in Baltimore who sought treatment at the Johns Hopkins Center for Addiction and Pregnancy, known as CAP. CAP brings together medical providers of several specialties to care for mothers and infants together. It's a unique model that Dr. Lauren Jansen, director of pediatrics at CAP, says makes a big difference.
So if you tell a mom that she has to come every day to a treatment program for medication, and then she has to have her social services appointments across the city, it's very difficult to manage.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Pregnant women struggling with addiction to opioids face intense stigma. The shame of using drugs makes it hard for them to seek treatment, and that puts their own health at risk as well as the health of their unborn baby. Pediatric health researchers estimate that a baby was born dependent on opioids every 25 minutes in 2012, the most recent year for which we have data. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services estimates that more than 2 million Americans suffer from opioid use disorder. Julia Lurie reports on the opioid overdose epidemic for the news magazine Mother Jones. She's written a story titled, Homeless, Addicted to Heroin, About to Give Birth. She joins us from San Francisco. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much.
How did you end up in Baltimore to research this story?
Well, I did a reporting trip to Baltimore a few months ago because I knew that it had one of the highest overdose rates of any city. And also, it has a different demographic than a lot of the places that we hear about in the news that have high overdose rates. A lot of what we've been hearing about lately have been suburban and rural areas with predominantly white populations. And in Baltimore, opioids have been a problem for a long, long time. A lot of folks that I talked to there said, you know, this has been an epidemic in my town since I can remember. And there are more people of color, and I wanted to go and learn more about what folks there thought of this epidemic and talk with some of the vulnerable populations who were dealing with it.
Tell us about the women you profiled here in Baltimore.
So I profiled two women who are now mothers, and I met them because they are patients at a program called the Center on Addiction and Pregnancy at Johns Hopkins. They both came to the center, which is called CAP, pregnant and homeless and addicted to heroin. And both had a sense that they didn't want their latest pregnancy to be like their former pregnancies in which they had been using drugs, but didn't really know what to do. They both came from places that had all sorts of compounding factors that are not particularly healthy for a pregnancy. Didn't have enough to eat, didn't have a roof over their heads. Both women had been prostituting. And to be honest, that's a pretty typical profile of a lot of women who are addicted to drugs who become pregnant. The drug use is obviously a problem, but there are tons of other compounding issues that make having a healthy pregnancy difficult, and later down the line make being a parent difficult. There were two women who I wrote about. One is Gina, and Gina, 2 years ago, was 35 and living in, like, you know, abandoned apartments and prostituting and hungry. She didn't have enough to eat, and she was, you know, digging through garbage cans and things like that to find food. She had had children before and had lost them because of her addiction. And she didn't want this pregnancy to go the same way, and she ended up at CAP, which another sex worker had told her about. And there aren't a lot of places for women like Gina to turn to in general. There are some drug treatment centers that will turn away pregnant women. There are some drug treatment centers that will take the pregnant woman but won't really do much more than a cursory drug test once in a while and give you your addiction medication and, you know, you're good to go. What someone like Gina felt like she needed was something much more comprehensive, something that was going to give her a support structure, addiction medication, counseling, help her get a roof over her head. CAP at Johns Hopkins was a place that could help her do that.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Julia Lurie, a reporter for Mother Jones. She covers the opioid overdose epidemic and has written about pregnant women and addiction. You also profiled Michelle.
Yeah, so Michelle, like Gina, came to CAP. It was also her fourth pregnancy, and she too wanted something better for this child that she was about to give birth to. And when I spoke with her in August, she was doing well. She had just given birth to this newborn who was just a few weeks old, and she was just beaming with love for this baby. And CAP had not only provided her with support, you know, during the pregnancy, but had also given her a support system of other moms who she could, you know, bounce ideas off of and vent to and things like that as she was going through all of this. A few months after I spoke with her again, and she had relapsed. Relapse is extraordinarily common when it comes to opioid use disorder. And therapists will say, you know, relapse is part of recovery. You can't discount a person just because they've relapsed, or it doesn't mean that they're not trying and things like that. But it does make cases like this really, really complicated because, you know, it's not safe for a child, especially a really young infant, to be parented by a mom who's being driven by her addiction. So she relapsed, and as happens pretty often, that sort of triggered this domino effect that happened very quickly. So she used heroin. Within a few days, she was prostituting again. Within a few days after that, Children's Services came for her kids. And when I talked to Michelle last, that's where she was. And if her past is an indicator, she's probably going to be in this place for a little while. I so hope that she survives and she is able to find services and stop using. But the many obstacles to getting from where she is now to being a healthy parent to healthy children, there's a lot between where she is now and that point.
What is the latest you have heard from or about Gina?
Gina is doing well. You know, she really wants to become an addiction counselor and is really passionate about school and has been taking classes.
Julia, thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Julia Lurie is a reporter for Mother Jones. We have links to her reporting on the opioid crisis, including her story on pregnancy and addiction, and on the children of addicted parents ending up in foster care at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break here on The Record. When we come back, caring for babies born in withdrawal from opioids. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Where can pregnant women struggling with addiction to opioids turn for help? What type of treatment takes into account the health of their unborn children? And how are those children affected by exposure to opioids? The Center for Addiction and Pregnancy, known as CAP, is located at the Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center in Baltimore. Since 1991, it has brought together medical providers in the fields of obstetrics and gynecology, pediatrics, substance abuse, and psychiatry to comprehensively treat mothers and infants. CAP also offers outpatient treatment as well as an overnight housing unit for patients. Federal data show that about 1 in 8 children under age 18 live in households where at least one parent experienced substance abuse disorder in the past year. But many pregnant women don't seek treatment. They worry that if they do, they'll be turned into police or child welfare services. Dr. Lauren Jansen is Director of Pediatrics at the Center for Addiction and Pregnancy, CAP, and an Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the Hopkins School of Medicine. I spoke with her at the center and asked how many women CAP treats each year.
CAP has on average a census of about 50 to 60 women at any given time. It's hard to say how many are treated per year because women are admitted and readmitted into treatment, but we have about between 80 and 90 to 100 deliveries per year.
And what drugs are they seeking treatment for?
Women come into CAP with substance use disorder for any substances. Women are typically using opioids here in this treatment center, but they also use cocaine. Women can be primary marijuana users seeking treatment. Really, any substance use treatment we treat.
CAP has been functioning for like 30 years.
Correct.
How has it changed over time? Are there more women seeking treatment for opioids now?
Well, the demographics of substance use in the state and in particular the city have changed over the years. When I first started here in 1991, we saw primarily opioid and cocaine-using women. We still see those women, but the opioids have changed in character. We see more women abusing licit opioids, like OxyContin. And we also see the marijuana users. Years ago, we did not have any women seeking treatment for primary marijuana use. But as we have more potent marijuana and more women are using marijuana these days, we have more women coming for marijuana.
How do women tend to find you?
It depends. They can be brought to CAP by a variety of reasons. Most women come because they're seeking treatment and they're pregnant and they want to have a good pregnancy and a healthy delivery. They can come by word of mouth. They can be court-ordered to come here. They can come here on a subsequent pregnancy.
How are infants affected by opioid use during a pregnancy?
Well, infants are affected in a variety of ways. First, maternal substance use disorder is something we can't leave out of this discussion because women who have a substance use disorder can have lifestyles that can portend unhealthy pregnancies, premature deliveries, lack of medical care, lack of obstetrical care, all of those things can affect a fetus and a developing infant. But I think what you're referring to is neonatal abstinence syndrome. So opioid-using women, when they're pregnant, come into treatment, and we generally treat them with a medication called either methadone or buprenorphine, and this is the standard of care in the United States today. And infants who are exposed to these medicines or other opioids can experience neonatal abstinence syndrome. Most people think of it as withdrawal. So infants can have problems in any one of four domains. So they can have problems with motor and tone control. They can have problems with sensory integration. They can have problems with autonomic functioning. Or they can have problems with state control and attention. And these can lead to a variety of symptoms that can cause problems with eating, sleeping, interacting, and growing.
I gather then you're saying you recommend that women begin medication-assisted treatment rather than trying to withdraw.
That's correct. And we have very little information about maternal withdrawal and fetal safety. You know, years ago there were some case reports that showed that fetuses were dying when women were withdrawing. We don't think that's the case today. We think medically supervised withdrawal could be safe. However, many women who have an opioid use disorder are unable to maintain their sobriety after they're withdrawn from substances for a variety of reasons. This is the nature of addiction. It's a chronic relapsing disease. So for their safety and the safety of their developing fetus and infant, we recommend that they take medications like methadone and buprenorphine during pregnancy.
And is there a difference in how infants are affected if they're exposed to opioids for medication-assisted treatment versus heroin or a street drug?
We know that infant outcomes for women that are maintained on methadone and buprenorphine when they're receiving comprehensive care, including obstetric care, infant outcomes are much better. Infants tend to be born at term. Infants tend to be of higher birth weight and more healthy in general. They can still have neonatal abstinence syndrome, and it's difficult or impossible to differentiate neonatal abstinence syndrome by type of drug, because women tend to have to take opioids, to take a lot of opioids. So they can take prescription opioids, they can take illicit opioids, they can have methadone and buprenorphine. However, we know these medications, even though they can predispose the infant to have neonatal abstinence syndrome, are much safer for the mother and the infant.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Dr. Lauren Jansen, Director of Pediatrics at the Center for Addiction and Pregnancy, called CAP, at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center. We're talking about how the center treats pregnant women struggling with drug dependence and newborns who were exposed to drugs in the womb. Do an infant's problems tend to be in direct proportion to the amount of opioid exposure?
No, and that's the interesting thing. We really have no idea why some infants experience very severe neonatal abstinence syndrome and why some infants can have a very mild expression. It does not depend on the amount of substance use that the woman's had in her lifetime. It doesn't depend on the amount of medication that she gets, so it doesn't depend on the dose of methadone or buprenorphine that she gets. We're starting to learn some things because there's been a lot of research in the past couple of decades. For instance, we know now that genetics and epigenetics play a role in NAS severity.
I have to ask you to explain epigenetics.
Epigenetics can be defined as transgenerational effects that are heritable. So it's changes in genetic structure that are heritable from generation to generation. We know that certain genetic phenotypes and certain epigenetic findings are related to NAS severity, which is newer research that's just come out. We know that women who use poly substances are more likely to have infants that have more severe neonatal abstinence syndrome. For example, heavy cigarette smoking has been shown to predispose infants who are opioid exposed in utero to more severe expression of neonatal abstinence syndrome. So there are a lot of factors that go into it, and they're all individual and they're all unique to these women and children.
How does alcohol use play into this?
It's a very good question. We don't have a great idea of how alcohol affects the expression of neonatal abstinence syndrome in opioid exposed infants. However, we do know that alcohol can predispose the infant to have fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and these are very severe, these can be very severe, lifelong deficits in some children.
Is alcohol more dangerous than drugs?
It's hard to say, because I think the expression of any fetal and infant effects of maternal substance use are very individual and variable and depend on many things, for example, genetics, as we just spoke. So it's hard to say which substance is the most harmful. Alcohol, we know, can be harmful because of these known effects of fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Opioids can predispose the infant to neonatal abstinence syndrome and alter trajectories of development. However, it's very difficult to compare one substance to the other.
Tell us something about the long-term effects for infants exposed to opioids in the womb.
It's very difficult to say. In my clinic, we follow children of women in the center until they're 21. So we've seen children for decades of pediatric health care. This is a very high-risk and vulnerable population for many reasons and many individual reasons. Maternal sobriety plays a major role in how children are able to grow and develop. So if we have mothers that are not able to access gender-specific and comprehensive treatment that they need prenatally and postnatally and throughout their child's lives, they can be more likely to have relapse and problems with other substance use, and we know that the development of their children can be affected by that. We know that for some infants with neonatal abstinence syndrome, if we don't provide proper parenting instruction around the time of care in the prenatal and postnatal periods, if we don't have mothers that know what to expect with neonatal abstinence syndrome, they may not respond appropriately to their infants. That can affect their attachment. That can affect the infant's development. It's very difficult to say what are the long-term effects. Recent research has shown that whether or not you're treated for neonatal abstinence syndrome with medication doesn't really matter in terms of your long-term development. Let me back up and explain that. We treat neonatal abstinence syndrome in several ways. So all infants that are opioid exposed get what we term non-pharmacologic care that starts at the time of delivery. In a nutshell, it's a thorough evaluation of the infant's functioning minute by minute. It's a thorough evaluation of maternal functioning and cognition minute by minute. And it's also an evaluation of how the mother and the infant communicate. Look at how the infant responds to different changes in the environment with diapering, with feeding. We look at the infant's NAS expression, and we look at how the mother responds to that. And then what we do is we make alterations in the environment or in handling of our infant. So, for example, if we have an infant that's very sensitive to visual stimuli, we might lower the lights in the room. If we have an infant that's very sensitive to auditory stimuli, we might decrease the sound in the room. And we teach the mother how to do this. So we provide all these aspects of non-pharmacologic care for each mother and each infant. For a certain subset of infants, and it's about half of them, about 50% of infants, that's not going to be enough to allow the infant to sleep, to feed, and to interact. So then we use medication. And typically we use morphine or methadone. We use morphine in this hospital, oral morphine. And it's a short-acting opioid, and we give the infant small amounts of medication every few hours until the infant's symptoms are captured. And then we leave the medication there for a day, and then we gradually decrease the medication over time, and we withdraw the infant from the medication, allowing the infant to receive just enough medication to get over the neonatal abstinence syndrome difficulties that they're having, and then we gradually wean them off it. Typically, our infants that get treated are hospitalized for about 12 to 14 days. Infants that don't require medication treatment are observed for a period of 4 days prior to hospital discharge, and we observe them for 4 days to see if they'll develop neonatal abstinence syndrome.
This sounds very complex to me. In the midst of all this, what does it accomplish to have healthcare providers who can treat both mom and baby all under the same roof?
Women with substance use disorder are typically unable or have great difficulty managing fractionated care. So if you tell a mom that she has to come every day to a treatment program for medication, and then she has to go every few weeks to an obstetric care center downtown, and then she has to have her social services appointments across the city, it's very difficult to manage. And for women that are vulnerable, that are going through a difficult period in their lives, who are seeking treatment and really trying to do the right things, these are all unaccomplishable if you fractionate that kind of care. So providing that kind of care in one place at one time, we know is the gold standard for care for this very vulnerable population.
Do you have any sense, I mean, you've been at this since 1991, are other hospitals following this kind of model?
I think there are other treatment centers that try to provide comprehensive care. It's not an easy task. It tends to be a little more expensive to provide this kind of care. It's difficult to meld different specialties. So we have obstetricians working with pediatricians, working with psychiatrists, and you have to have specialists that really understand the importance of all of those aspects of the woman's care, but it's completely accomplishable. So while we know this is the gold standard, it's not what all women are receiving. So many women, even in the city here where this program's available, receive what we call gas and go treatment, which is just methadone or just buprenorphine. So they come once a week or once a month, get medication and take it home. This really isn't the optimal way to care for this pregnancy or this woman who has all these needs, including obstetric needs and ultimately neonatal needs down the line. So we feel that providing comprehensive care is the way to go, and we know this from the available literature.
And who pays for this care?
Largely, our women are on federal assistance, on medical assistance here in the Center for Addiction and Pregnancy. But we do know that the cost savings from a program like this, from research that was done at this center, do translate down the line. So if we can have women avoid having a preterm baby, for example, which is very, very costly, that's a big cost savings. Those are very hard to measure over time. But we do believe, and we do know from literature, that this is cost saving in the long run.
What other services do you think would be useful in supporting these families and keeping the moms in recovery?
I would like to see the definition of comprehensive care for women with substance use disorder as not only for the period of pregnancy through childbirth, but through the child's first 3 years of life. I would like to see the comprehensive care model continued into at least the period that we know is critical for infant brain development, which is the first 3 years. So I would like to see women's health care, women's substance use disorder treatment, contraceptive care, all combined in a place with pediatric care. And that's accessible. You know, we can have that. We do have women in substance use disorder treatment in our building here, for example, where they come for pediatric care. So it is at least in the same building. I can refer them for contraceptive care in the same building. But my ideal program would have this comprehensive care model continue for years after delivery.
I really appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Dr. Lauren Jansen is Director of Pediatrics at the Johns Hopkins Center for Addiction and Pregnancy and an Associate Professor of Pediatrics in the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.